This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon and welcome to Health and Living with me, T. Xiao Yik. Today is our Mind Matters show and we are discussing how poverty and income affects mental health. So I think there's more than enough evidence to show that poverty, financial instability and social inequalities are intertwined with mental health. And of course, with the crushing impact of COVID-19 on the economy, low-income communities are especially affected. They're dealing with the double burden of financial instability as well as psychological stress. So I'm speaking today to Alicia Othman, the Managing Director of Souls Health, as well as Encik Ahmad Fauzi Muhammad Nazam, Chairman of Kawasan Rukun Tetangga Zone Kota Anggerik B, and that's in Shah Alam. And I'd like to get them to share more about the challenges faced by lower income communities as well as the support they need when it comes to improving their mental health. How are the both of you today?
I'm good, Xiao Yik. Thank you. Thank you for having us.
As always, thank you so much for your time. Encik Fauzi, perhaps we can start. If you could explain to us, actually, in Rukun Tetangga is something I think most Malaysians are familiar with, of course, that concept, right, of the community. But can you explain to us what your community actually does?
Okay, good morning. I just share a bit about Rukun Tetangga. We have about 8,500 Rukun Tetangga in whole Malaysia. It started in 1975, back more than 30 years ago, and it has transformed from a concept, from a security concept to a neighborhood concept. This is where we develop communities. So we play our role as an NGO, as a government NGO, to create engagement between communities and government agencies to develop the communities. So the part where I involved is in Kota Anggerik, part of Shah Alam district. Mm-hmm. We have in our community, there are about 9,500 families with a population of more than 30,000.
Wow. In Kota Anggerik?
In Kota Anggerik, yes.
And could you describe a little bit more to help us get a better picture of your community over there?
Yeah, these more than 30,000 families, they are divided into 40 different resident associations. We have generally, it's more like 70 to 75% of Malay ethnic, 15 to 20% of Chinese ethnic, and the rest 10 to 15% Indian. Mm-hmm. Yeah, basically, the community that we have here is generally among the B40, M40, and T20. We have about 40% of B40, 40% of M40, and 20% of T40. It's generally about the composition of general Malaysian statistics. Mm. And most of these B40 group living in apartments, M40 group in terrace houses. And in B40 groups, we have 3,000 families over here, 1,000 of them staying in low-cost apartment, the balance of another 1,000 staying in a medium-cost apartment. So we are, a lot of our focus is doing, helping on the low-cost apartment, most of the concentrated of the lower part of the B40 group. Mm. And there are most of them, I would say easily 30% of them maybe drivers involved in taxis, deliveries, lorries, mm-hmm. more of the blue-collar job.
Okay, but it does sound like a very typical Malaysian community, mixed in terms of racial diversity and income levels as well.
Yeah, exactly. It wonders also. It surprised me also when I do simple statistics. It seems generally implicate how the Malaysian structure of a socio-economy over here in section U16 of Shah Alam.
All right. But I guess today we want to look at the particular challenges faced by the B40 as well as the perhaps the lower M40 groups. Alicia, perhaps you could share some experience from Seoul's health's perspective. And we want to look at how COVID-19 and the MCO has affected the lower income communities that you work with.
Okay. At Source Health, we work with primarily two large PPR communities. So one, our collaboration with Encik Fauzi at U16, which is more of the suburb population, and one in the urban KL population. So obviously, there are some differences in terms of these two communities. However, I just like to focus on, you know, the common issues that have emerged right throughout this COVID pandemic is, again, the income inequality, or in a way security, because a lot of them have lost substantial amount of their income due to, you know, being in on a daily wage, or particularly in the urban setting, a lot of them are small business owners, you know, like making, for example, food and basic basic services. And I think the other part that we're talking with regarding the adults, right, loss of income and most of them in terms of household, they are living in terms of three generations, right? That means the working adults also doing caregiving of their elderly parents, who usually, you know, also have in terms of chronic illness, and also children, right? So in this kind of three generation household, which is on average about 6 to 8 people with a loss of income, and during the MCO, most of the students, the children are at home and not having access as well to digital device to be able to catch up on their education. So I think these are the two main things in terms of the how the COVID has impacted them in terms of the financial or economic insecurity, as well as poorer quality of education, because they were not, usually on a daily basis, they were in the kind of the educational setting of the public schools. So we have seen that, and also another point is also the WHO statistic that have shown as well, right, the increase of domestic violence. But again, this is across, not particularly where there's low income communities, just across. So these are what we have seen, the two main socioeconomic challenges that have then, affected in a way their state of mental health, because it leads to economic insecurity, obviously leads to a higher level of stress. And particularly, that lacking of access in terms of also healthcare for the caring of the those with chronic illness. And then for the children, we have, had reports from the parents saying that some of the children have shown signs of, anxiety, signs of also depression in terms of just being at home and not being able to, to keep to their daily routine of going to school.
Encik Fauzi, I assume that those socioeconomic challenges that Alicia mentioned apply or are also apparent in your community. But, when we're talking about things like loss of income and the challenges of taking care of elderly as well as young children, those problems don't just stop there, right? They have a ripple effect and they result in other kinds of problems. Are you able to already see some of these issues surfacing among the residents in your community? Perhaps you could give us some examples if there are.
Yeah, with our involvement in communities, we have been engaged deeply with the community for the past 8 years. We are seeing this is affecting them. They have experiences in economy affected their income. So to me, what is important here is the role to be played by us and NGO, by the community leaders and NGO to create engagement among the community members with the government agencies to create support. This is what I think is important. This is what we are doing. Mm.
Okay. What kind of support is important for them?
Basically, to open up their mind, to make them see what role can they play. What I'm seeing, what I've seen is the gap between the needs of the community and the availability of supports by the government agencies. So that's where we come in as NGO, as the community leaders, to bridge the gap between the needs and the facilities support available, made available by the government. Yeah.
Can you give an example of what kind of specific facilities that is currently perhaps lacking or needs improvement and for you to be able to fill in that gap?
Okay, the government have provided few supports, and even now the Prime Minister also have launched the various supports in Penjana, where the government creating many supports in menjana semula economy post COVID. So what I'm seeing, the importance is to manage the gap between what is available and what is needed. So the community, especially the B40 group, need assistance in guiding them where to get and how to get the support. I have seen an experience where the government provide the support, but these groups having difficulty in accessing to the support. They don't have the competence in IT, in technology,
right,
to access and get the facilities provided by the government. So sometimes the support doesn't reach, the assistance doesn't reach to the right candidates. There are many more on the lower part of the B40 group does not have the effective access to the facilities provided by the government. That's how I see it.
Yeah, I'd like to add an example during the COVID where a lot of the financial support was given to to be basically families, right? But there's also, like, for example, gaps such as women who are who have legal status of being married. However, in a way, effectively, they are separated from their husbands, right? So they were, due to this legal status, a lot of them were unable to obtain this support. So we Source Health, particularly, we did work with Institute Wanita Berdaya, right, to come up with that kind of to help IWB work with the state exco on identifying and providing setting up a dana to support this kind of women who fell through the cracks, right, because they don't qualify. And again, so this is where I think Encik Fauzi's mentioned about the role of the civil society or NGO to kind of advocate for particularly the B40. And the other thing that I also want to highlight is also the peer leadership. It's also like, how do we build capacity, right, within the community itself? Who do we identify as, those from? Because they are the ones with the lived experience, right? So they should be representing their community. And how do we then develop that capacity in terms of becoming that bridge between the B40, the NGOs, and, the Egypt government policymakers.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, agencies, yeah. And very often there's the disconnect, there's like, okay, here's the bantuan, and then as Fauzi mentioned, everything has to be logged into internet. But we know that a lot of B40 families, particularly the B1020, right, they don't have digital devices. So they are already disadvantaged due to that, right? Unless, there's also that someone in the community, the leadership that could support, identify. And I think one good example that we work with Encik Fauzi was that as a Source Health, being a partner of Yayasan Hasanah, we had that access, because Hasanah was helping a lot of communities during the COVID. So we reached out to Encik Fauzi, and Encik Fauzi, representing his community, had all the statistics, you know, on which communities that needed help and support. So we kind of bridged that by you know, providing the information to Encik Fauzi and then linking him to Yayasan Hasanah to get the support. So I think it's it requires, you know, in terms of community building, it does require a concerted effort from different parties, and not just, you know, waiting from government giving support to the B40. There's a lot of that coordination that is required.
All right. We'll go for a quick break now, and when we come back, well, I want to ask, what's all this got to do with mental health? I mean, we are addressing income and financial issues, but how is that linked to mental health? So I'm speaking today to Alicia Othman, Managing Director from Souls Health, as well as Encik Ahmad Fauzi Muhammad Nazam, Chairman of Kawasan Rukun Tetangga Zone Kota Anggerik B in Shah Alam. We are discussing how financial status affects mental health on our Mind Matters show today. Stay tuned. We'll be right back on BFM 89.9. Welcome back to Health and Living with me, T. Xiao Ik. On the line with me for our Mind Matters show today are Encik Ahmad Fauzi Muhammad Nazam, Chairman of Kawasan Rukun Tetangga Zone Kota Anggerik B. Joining him also, Alicia Othman, Managing Director of Souls Health. We're trying to get the two different perspectives today to discuss how poverty and income as well as employment affects mental health. So Encik Fauzi has been sharing, painting a picture for us of the community in Zone Kota Anggerik B, which is a very large community, a population of 30,000, mixed income levels, racial diversity. It's like a mini microcosm of Malaysia right there in U16 of Shah Alam, it sounds like. And Encik Fauzi, you've already described, I think what is most important is being able to connect the B40 groups or those most in need of services and facilities, and being able to connect them with the respective government agencies who are providing that assistance and support. And Alicia, you've described how Souls Health is working with communities like Encik Fauzi's. You've described helping them to connect with different agencies and other NGOs to get funds and these kinds of support. But Alicia, what's all that got to do with mental health?
Well, when we talk about, you know, economic inequality, you know, it has an it is a social determinant of health and also to mental health. And why? Because when it comes to those who are facing, for example, these financial challenges, it does create a barrier, right, in terms of accessing healthcare services. And we know when it comes to mental health, with early intervention, it does contribute to better prognosis in terms of recovery. And again, you know, when we talk about the lack of access, it's not just about access to healthcare, but also barriers in terms of the support that they need, right, from in terms of, like, for example, childcare, because that's what they need to be able to commit to the or to be compliant to some of the treatment to attend for the mental health services. And I think what also is another thing that we want to talk about, like the lack of also education when it comes to mental health services, because communities that face these challenges, their daily life situation is already very challenging, yeah, and not having access to services, not having also access to the right resources and information increases the stigma. So when there's stigma, then again, the likelihood of them accessing the services increases. So this then leads to, you know, reduce outcomes in the long term, which will also lead to reduce unemployment and also likelihood for income. And therefore, it creates kind of, it perpetuates like a cycle, right? So we always say that it's a two-way relationship, that for those to prevent mental health illness, you will need, you know, all these kind of services and support. However,
with these barriers, you know, you are at a higher risk of getting the mental illness, and then the mental illness will then, you know, put you at a higher risk of loss of income and unemployment, or even isolation in the long term.
Injit Fauzi, what is the perception of mental health issues among your community? Is it something that is openly discussed?
Okay, we have to see mental health in the perspective, in a more common or layman, see it as actually it's just merely stress.
Mm-hmm.
Stress in communities, which is for them to manage the gap between the real needs and the perceived needs. So what happened in these low-income communities or B40 group, they are facing with lack of confidence and low engagement in delivering support. This is based on experience what they have in the past, where they feel that they won't get the right need, the right support, and to receive the right facilities. So this is where we come in as NGO.
Yeah.
In this big community, we have the M40 group and B40 group. So we coordinate to get the M40 group to help and assist the B40 group, where the support and facilities are available made by the government through the government agencies. So we come in with our skills and competencies to help to match and to bridge the gap.
So what you're saying is that because of that lack of confidence, as well as the lack of access, because there is that gap, so that results in stress on the communities.
Yeah, yeah.
And when you are able to help them connect and help them get the services and assistance, do you see a positive impact on that stress level?
Yes, definitely yes. Since I involved deeply in this work for the past 8 years, I've seen the great difference when I started 8 years ago and now. We are seeing, we are experiencing the positive differences. And we are seeing the confidence level start rising up. So this is where we need soul health, because this is part of the community issues. There are many issues in the community, apart from education, apart from economy, apart from security, safety, cleanliness. All these things has to be put into together. Mm-hmm. We are helping to integrate and putting all these resources together, mm-hmm, to help this group to achieve a better level of community building.
Mm. And do you do, as what Alicia mentioned earlier, about building capacity within the community? So selecting those who can represent the community, who can take on the kinds of responsibilities of engaging with the community and connecting them with the various support systems that they need.
Yes, yes. This is a long process. I have been seeing this since 2012 when I first started involving in this. And we are seeing it is a process of engagement. We get all about 15 KRTs together, Kawasan Rukun Tetangga, and we have more than 25 residence associations together, and we have more than 6 or 7 JMBs, joint management bodies. These are all different type of NGOs, government NGOs, that we create engagement to work together to help the community members. So what is important is at the same time to improve their competence. And part of our strategy is to have this program, what we call Program Sayang Community, PSK. Program Sayang Community is part of a program in KRT, Kawasan Rukun Tetangga, to polish the skills of community leaders, especially in this B40 group, so that they can bring up issues in their communities.
Mm. And what kinds of issues have they brought up?
Basically, all the basic facilities requirement, like the social economy, especially those in the bottom level of the B40 group. Even there are those who are unemployed, and we can't even initially identify or locate them. So when you can't identify and locate them effectively, then those who are less qualified, but they have access, to the facilities, they will get it. And then those who don't have access and they don't know what they don't know, and they are left behind.
Mm.
So there is our one, another aim is to make sure that no one is left behind.
Alicia, how does Soul's Health work with Zone Kota Anggrek B in terms of going beyond what you've explained about building capacity and addressing those basic needs? If we look at the next level of mental health services, how do you work with the community?
Okay. So at the collaboration with the community, right, we, of course, like I said, we've done, you know, a lot of the kind of the coordination with the community leaders. And also because of the nature of, you know, the communities, we have actually, you know, conducted kind of that community needs assessment, right? Understanding that level of risk, level of stigma, and also identifying, like we work with also the school in that, the Sekolah Rendah in that area, together with the management of the school and the headmaster, who's very, very supportive. So this is again linking, right, like the major actors in the community and understanding what are their needs, what are the risks, and how do, and then we co-develop. So for example, the program, the KAMI program, which is mainly focusing on the strengthening families and youth relationship. It's, the objective is, although it is to strengthen family relationship, it's with the kind of implied mental health education there, because family relationship is a protective factor against, you know, mental health illness. So from there, we then developed the program in a way that is culturally competent to understand the language, the cultural sensitivity, so we can kickstart that conversation about mental health. And from there, you know, we then, you know, embed kind of the how do you detect kind of the symptoms. And like how Encik Fauzi mentioned, right, how do we navigate the system? So if the detection is there, how do we then, you know, help them to also access the services in the way that they are able to? Because sometimes, I think what Encik Fauzi mentioned is really, really relevant. A lot of them don't even know how to speak to, say, you know, when they need a psychiatrist or a doctor. They may not, you know, be as forthcoming to disclose, right, about the symptoms due to stigma or whatever. So again, those are the things that we try as best possible through our program. So we do kind of that through the program, we embed that mental health education as well. And that's where, you know, we work together again, ensuring that we move them towards that, you know, get them to raise their awareness, get them out of the, you know, how Encik Fauzi said, sometimes they don't know what they don't know. So with the raising awareness through a way that is more engaging, you know, more useful to them. Because when we talk about family, I think across all the B40 communities, when we start talking about how to strengthen family relationships, it is a need. Everyone, so far, we've not been to a community where they say, we don't need this. You know, so again, understanding how to approach, you know, using the community mental health approach is not just talking about symptoms from day one. You know, we talk about the symptoms as part of the main needs of the community. Yeah.
But Encik Fauzi, when it comes to actually seeking mental health services, just like healthcare services, is cost a problem for the community?
Okay, it is a matter of how we approach them. It is a matter of how we approach the community. First is to make things success, we have to believe in it. So we have to make them accept what we are offering to them. In order to make them accept of what we are doing to them, what we are offering to them, what we are assisting them, is to create the trust. So that's where we have to work very closely together among the even 40 communities that we have over here in Section U16. We work together among the community leaders, and we guide. We work together with the community leaders, with all the chairmen of their associations, to guide their own members. So that's how I see what is important is that when we get the trust from them, then it's very easy for us to help them. So it is a common understanding, a common role. So we have to work together to create this thing.
And what do you think, Alicia, is cost a prohibitive factor for communities seeking mental health support?
Well, yes, indeed. You know, if we talk about economic inequality, again, the cost, because it's definitely an additional financial burden to them. Although in the public healthcare system, I think it's quite affordable, but it's more of the opportunity cost. You know, that means the time they are taking off work to go to the hospital. And I think this is where we would need to come up with more innovative ways, right, of delivering the services. And how, again, when we talk about the task sharing model, right, how we cannot just wait for them to just go to the experts. So this is where the role of the civil society and the NGOs come in terms of providing those needs in a way that's more cost effective. So example of, providing more support groups. Like in the COVID situation, what we have done, we've gone to the communities, doing a bit of the psychological first aid through telephone, so it doesn't have to be face-to-face. So there's no cost, in a way, a high cost factor. And also identifying what are the needs, and then providing more group support. Because not everybody needs the individual, services, which is, of course, more costly. So there are ways, again, to make it cost effective, but it does require commitment of various stakeholders to co-develop this and also deliver it. So I think just beyond being that, finding those innovative ways on how to ensure that we have a more cost effective model. Because a big part of our work again is the prevention and promotion rather than treatment, and easily about 80% of the population requires that kind of preventive treatment rather than on the other end.
All right. To wrap up, Encik Fauzi, everybody is saying that COVID-19 is here for quite a long time, and the economy obviously will take time to recover from the impact as well. What can your community do to strengthen itself?
Yes, true. It is a never-ending process. It will be going on and on. So what is important here is for us to create support. We should bring together to bridge the gap between the government support program and the NGO that we have in the community. So what we are doing is we continue activate and mobilize all NGOs in our community. We have our meetings among us from time to time to assess the real needs, the local needs, because we are the local. We are representing the people. We know better about their needs. Sometimes what the government are providing might not necessarily mesh the current needs because time has changed. The needs that we provide, that we agree, that we see 5 or 10 years ago might not be relevant now. Mm-hmm. So that's where we have to work very closely with the local NGOs to fine-tune the right needs that can benefit the people. So Yeah, it is going on. It's a long process.
Alicia, what do you think communities can do to strengthen themselves?
Yeah, I would like to echo what Encik Fauzi mentioned, right, about the support. And an extension of that is, again, how do we, I think it's very important, how do we build community resilience in this time? And resilience, again, is like a muscle, right? It's a skill that you need to learn. And I think the role of the civil society or NGO is empowering the people in the community. So, the peer support or leadership to be able to work with the communities, garner that support within the communities, and then use a lot of that because they know their strengths, right? They know their strengths, and as the NGOs, we support them in the area of their needs, so that they can lead, they can creatively also be part of the solution, as opposed to just that charity mindset of just receiving kind of a handout. So I think we want to move away from that, right? We support them in the area that the community needs, but the strength in the community, I think, needs to be amplified. So, example within Encik Fauzi's community, their neighborhood support, right, the within the families are very strong. So that's what we want to use it as protective support in terms of buffering, the kind of the negative impact of COVID. Because I through our work with different communities, each individual and even the community leadership, right, they are usually sometimes more resilient than the rest of us. It's just that we just need to kind of provide them that boost, the right tools, skills, knowledge, and kind of to kickstart that process. So I think that's where, again, I would say the civil society and NGOs play the important role in empowering and building capacity. Mm. So that we share the burden becomes kind of a shared responsibility as opposed to a burden. Yeah.
And as opposed to being a charitable kind of process.
Yeah.
Like you said, empowerment is such a big word, isn't it?
Exactly.
But thank you so much. I'm afraid we've run out of time. Thank you, Alicia and Fauzi. I've been speaking to Alicia Othman, Managing Director from Souls Health, and Ahmad Fauzi Mohamad Nazam, Chairman of Kawasan Rukun Tetangga Zone Kota Anggerek B. You've been listening to Health and Living on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.